crying. I haven't even started yet. Good morning. Welcome. It's good to see everybody here. I hope you will take out a Bible. In fact, if you were reading along in John, we're going to be spending our time primarily in John chapter 11. Make certain that what is said is in accordance to God's Word. You know, there are many reasons why I believe in a God. I believe in God because of the argument of origins. Everything must come from some place, and so there must be a first place, something that is eternal, that is God. I believe in God because I believe in the argument of design. That is, everything that is orderly must have a designer, and I see that there is tremendous order all around me. I believe in a God because I believe in the argument of morality. That is, that there is the view of right and wrong, and that must have some source beyond just random forces. And those arguments go on and on. And then, in addition, I believe in the God of the Bible for additional reasons. I believe in the God of the Bible because of prophecy, men who were able to predict the future hundreds of years before the events actually occurred. I believe in the God of the Bible because of the witnesses of the miracles of Jesus and the miracles of the Christians. I believe in the God of the Bible because of the resurrection. I believe in the God of the Bible because of the conversion of Saul. All these reasons and many more. But in all of these, I do not want you to think that there is not arguments against God. That there are people that are out there that do not believe in the God of the Bible, who do not believe in God, have no reason for those. And there are various reasons they have for their faith. And one of them is the problem of suffering. And I want to talk about that one a little bit this morning, in specific in regards to John chapter 11. I want to talk about Jesus and the problem of suffering. We'll get into that, the title, which does not exist. The title of this morning's sermon is No Signal. Everything else was on there. No. All right. I get my notes, you don't. I'm still going to click it. I have such a habit. Okay. The title of this morning's lesson is If Only Jesus Had Been There. And it's in regards to this idea of suffering. I really am. I'm going to click it. Okay. Here's the problem of suffering, the argument stated. It's very, very simple. It says, basically, if there's a good God, I can't do this. Somebody fix this. Hold on. I am so thrown off. We're going to start over. I've probably just unplugged something up here. It wouldn't be a bad idea. Should come back up. All right. If God is all powerful, why is there suffering? That's the first part. The second part of the argument is that if there is suffering and God is all powerful, then he must not be all loving. And you know, we say this about God, that he is omnipotent, he is all powerful, and we talk about him being all loving, and the argument is that can't be the case because there is suffering. Do you understand the argument of suffering? It says that there couldn't be suffering if there's a God who's powerful enough to stop it, unless that God is so powerful but he doesn't care about the fact that you suffer. And that's why I want us to look at John chapter 11, because this particular passage deals with that subject from the perspective of Jesus. If we consider Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 3, Hebrews chapter 1 and verse 3, in regards to Jesus, it tells us that Jesus is the exact representation of the Father, of his nature. So when we're looking at Jesus, we're not just seeing Jesus. Jesus is revealing to us who God is and how God reacts. And so in John chapter 11, what we have is Jesus dealing with someone's suffering. Now, I'm not going to take the time to read the entire chapter. We're going to go back through and we're going to look at verses 1 through 46 and we'll look at various parts of it. But what I want to start off with is just a basic summary of this chapter. And so it starts off with Jesus, and he's with his disciples, and some servants come running up to him, and they say, Lazarus is sick. And what this is essentially a 911 call. This is somebody calling and saying, we need help. We need help immediately. Could you imagine if you called 911? Actually, I don't know how many of you have ever had to call 911, but it's a very disturbing experience. You're in an emergency. You call 911, and then the minutes take an eternity. 5 minutes for them to get to you, and that takes a very long time. If it's 10 minutes, you start complaining, where are they? Imagine if they said, well, you know what? We recognize that you have an emergency, but I'm eating breakfast. And then after I'm done with breakfast, I was really thinking I might get lunch. And after I'm done with lunch, I'm going to, well, they're having a great dinner here, so we're going to have dinner. And then I'm going to go to sleep because I'll be tired at that point. And tomorrow I might do the same thing, but then eventually I'll get to you. The uproar, if 911 ever did that. But here they call Jesus and they say, Jesus, Lazarus is sick. And Jesus stays 2 days. Very intentionally. He tells them it's all going to work out. And then 2 days later, after having stayed there 2 days, he tells his disciples, all right, we need to go see Lazarus. I need to wake him up. They say, well, if he's asleep, he'll wake up on his own. They say, no, you don't understand. He's dead. Jesus waited until he died. And then says, now let's go. And as he's going, Martha, Lazarus' sister, finds out that Jesus is coming. And so she comes and she runs out to him and she says, if only you'd been here, he wouldn't have died. And they have this discussion, and Jesus is basically saying, it's going to work out in the end. And so then Jesus calls for Mary, Lazarus' other sister, and Mary comes running out to him. And she says, if only you'd been here, Jesus, he wouldn't have died. And Mary is followed by many of these mourners, and Jesus sees Mary in the state that she's in, and he sees the mourners, and it says that he was touched in the heart. Are you going to fix something for me? Okay. Let me know when it's working again and I'll get caught up. And so it's three times in John chapter 11, in verse 21, in verse 32, and in verse 37. Three times that statement is made, if only you had been here. And so what we have is this situation where suffering is occurring and they're dealing with this problem of suffering, not on an intellectual level, but on a personal, emotional level, saying, why did you let this happen? And I suspect that there are many here who have dealt with the problem of suffering on an intellectual level. But on a personal level, we all have. We all deal with this issue of suffering. Why does this happen? Well, consider John chapter 11 and our argument. Remember, if God is all-powerful, he wouldn't let suffering happen. Or, God is not all-loving, and that's why suffering happens. But you consider the book of John in chapter 11, and what we find out is that Jesus still has all power and all authority, despite the fact that Lazarus suffers and dies, and everybody else is suffering now as a result of that. In John chapter 11 and verse 37, the basic argument in verse of why they're asking, why did this happen? Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man also from dying? So here their argument is, Jesus could have done something. And everybody understood that. Of all the people, he could have done something. That's why they sent a messenger, an urgent message saying, Lazarus is sick, come do something. Now there's something they didn't take into account, but we do as we look at the gospel, and that is Jesus didn't have to go there. If you consider what happens in Luke chapter 7, verses 1 through 10. Are we up? Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Derek. I mean that sincerely. So we're looking at Jesus still had all power and all authority. In Luke chapter 7, in verse 1, when he had completed all his discourse in the hearing of the people, he went to Capernaum, and a centurion slave who was highly regarded by him was sick and about to die. When he heard about Jesus, he sent some Jewish elders asking him to come and save the life of his slave. When they came to Jesus, they earnestly implored him, saying, he is worthy for you to grant this to him, for he loves our nation, and it is he who built us our synagogue. Now Jesus started on his way with them, and when he was not far from the house, the centurion sent friends saying to him, Lord, do not trouble yourself further, for I am not worthy for you to come under my roof. For this reason I did not even consider myself worthy to come to you, but just say the word, and my servant will be healed. For I also am a man placed under authority with soldiers under me, and I say to this one, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my slave, do this, and he does it. Now when Jesus heard this, he marveled at him and turned and said to the crowd and those that were following him and said, I say to you, not even in Israel have I found such great faith. When those who had been sent returned to the house, they found the slave in good health. And so here's this man saying, Jesus, you don't have to come. I just need you to heal him. Just say it and it'll happen. So when Jesus lets Lazarus suffer and he lets Lazarus die, he really let Lazarus suffer, and he really let Lazarus die. He could have stopped it. He had the power, no question about that. He had the ability to do it even from a distance, but he didn't do it. That power didn't go away. But what he also had was he still had this authority, this respect. Now, when we get to the people, the Mary and Martha, and the disciples, they understand that Jesus has waited. They understand that he's too late, or so they think. And look what they still call him. In verse 8, his disciples still refer to him as Rabbi. That is a statement of respect and teacher. And verse 28, when Martha refers to about Jesus to Mary, he says, the teacher is here. They didn't give up on him. You let him suffer, you let him die. They didn't give up. They still call him teacher. Look how many times Jesus is still referred to as Lord in this chapter. In verse 12, Lord, if he has fallen asleep, he will recover. In verse 21, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. In verse 27, yes, Lord, I have believed that you are the Christ. In verse 32, Mary's now talking. She says, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. In verse 34, where have you laid him? And they said to him, Lord, come and see. In verse 39, Jesus said, remove the stone. Martha, the sister of the deceased, said to him, Lord, by this time there will be a stench. All this time, he's still Lord. In fact, with Martha, if you go back to verse 27, she says much more than just Lord. She says, yes, Lord, I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world. And so she recognized his authority. She recognized who he was. That was still true, even though he had allowed Lazarus to suffer, and Martha and Mary and all the relatives to suffer as well. What else is also true, and this chapter is really trying to emphasize this, is that Jesus still cared. See, that was the logical argument, saying that if God is all-powerful and we still suffer, that must mean he just doesn't care about us. He doesn't care about what we're going through. But look at how it's stated over and over again. John chapter 11 and verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. In verse 33, when Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews who came with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and was troubled. When he saw them suffering, it hurt him internally. And in verse 35, the end response of this, it says, Jesus wept. And then look what's been stated the next thing, verse 36. This is what becomes incredibly obvious. Verse 36, so the Jews were saying, see how he loved him. Something's wrong here. He has all the power, and he still has the love. And so what we find is that argument, that logical progression, is missing something. The problem of suffering is not so simple as to say, if God really had all power, there would be no suffering, so there must be a God without all power. But since there is still suffering, there must not be a God who cares about us. There is alternative explanations. If you notice what you saw in verse 37... I'm sorry, not verse 37, but verse 33. Jesus didn't like seeing them suffer. Jesus has allowed something he does not like. And that's something that is ignored. That God can do things he doesn't want to do. things that he doesn't like to do. And he has his purpose. I want you to consider one other thing about this, and we're all this problem of suffering. I want you to consider it from another perspective. And here's, I'm going to make a statement of faith. It's a personal statement. You're welcome to challenge it. I would love it if you would go and find something where I'm wrong about this. But I don't believe God's ever asked us to do anything he wasn't willing to do himself. Go through scriptures and find something that God asks us to do that he's not willing to do himself. And one of the most obvious cases is with Abraham, when he tells Abraham, I want you to sacrifice your son. And then he stops Abraham from actually doing it. But then what does God do when Jesus comes? He really sacrifices his son. We talk about baptism, oh, the mighty thing that God asks us to do. But Jesus actually does it too, doesn't he? Down the line, I can't think of anything where God's asked us to do it where he's not willing to do it himself. We've all been asked to suffer. And he was willing to suffer too. Set aside this argument of whether he has enough power, he does. Whether he has enough love, he does. And look at the nature of our God, and our God suffers with us. And that is true in regards to the things that we go through. When he sees our suffering, it hurts him. And it is true in regards to Jesus on the cross, with the pain of the nails in his hands and in his feet, with his back having been slashed to pieces, the blood dripping through his eyes, he suffered. So maybe we're looking at the problem wrong. In fact, what we find out with John is we find out that there's additional things to consider, and the first one is that all things do work out in the end. If we look at just this one little moment, this few days where Lazarus is going through this suffering of an illness that is going to take his life, and there's that moment. This is a terrifying moment for me. As much as I believe in life everlasting, as much as I believe in the resurrection, I'm really not excited about that moment that I die. That's a difficult moment. And Lazarus is approaching it, and he reaches it, and he dies. And we focused on this little moment, though, instead of the big picture. And the big picture, this Jesus was telling us from the very beginning, as it starts off in John chapter 11, and verse 4, when Jesus heard this, he said, this sickness is not to end in death, but for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by it. From the very beginning, he doesn't focus on the temporary moment, but on the big picture. He says, yes, yes, okay, he's sick. And he knows he's going to die, but he says, in the end, there's a purpose to this. And he looks at the big picture. In Romans chapter 8 and verse 28, we remind ourselves of this during our times of suffering. We remind ourselves that there's purpose to these things and that in the end, it works out. We know that God causes all things to work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. If you will follow God and if you will set your heart towards him, in the end, it doesn't mean you won't suffer, but it means in the end, it will work out. Now what happens with Lazarus is he doesn't have to wait that long for the end. We normally think about the end. When Jesus returns, the world is destroyed, and we get to spend the rest of eternity in heaven. Everything will have worked out in the end. I'm quite confident of this. No matter what you suffer through, no matter what you endure, on the day of judgment, if you hear, well done, and you spend the rest of your eternity in heaven, you will not look back with regret at what you had to go through to get there. I'm quite convinced of that. In the end, it all works out. But with Lazarus, he didn't even have to wait that long, did he? With Lazarus, it's all fixed just a few days later. But it's just a microcosm. It's just a little picture of the bigger picture for all of us. And that is, in the end, it does work out. But the other thing that John 11 really emphasizes on is that God has his reasons for the suffering. You and I aren't always privy to it. We don't always get to see it. We almost always want to. When we're suffering, there's just one little three-letter question we almost always want to ask, why? And I don't have the answer for you. But I have this. There is an answer. You may not see it, you may not know it, but it exists. In the book of John, we see Jesus say a few things that tells us there's purpose to these things. It may be one that's not one of much comfort, but it may be that it's a result of sin. This is an interesting thing Jesus says earlier. In John chapter 5, there's this man who's a paralytic, and he can't be cured. He can't be healed. And Jesus comes and heals him, and then later on comes and finds him again and says this to him in verse 14. After Jesus found him in the temple and said to him, "Behold, you have become well. Do not sin anymore so that nothing worse happens to you." Jesus has just declared something to us, and that is sometimes our suffering and our pain is a result of our own actions. We are paying a price or perhaps a punishment for the things we've done. That is sometimes the case, but it means this. There's a reason for it. It's not just random and purposeless. There's a reason for it. But it's not always that reason. If you go to John chapter 9, the disciples, they seem to have really caught on to that one statement of Jesus because they come upon this man who was born blind. And now for years and years and years, the parents have had to deal with this issue. This man has had to deal with this issue. He's just out there begging. And so they ask in verse 2, "Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he would be born blind?" And so now they're making the assumption the purpose of suffering is sin. That is why everybody suffers. The only reason why we suffer is sin. And Jesus answered and said, "It was neither that this man sinned nor his parents, but it was so that the works of God might be displayed in him." And so Jesus answers and says, no, that's not the reason. Now, I don't know how much comfort that would have really given that family. Years and years and years of having to deal with blindness in a society where they weren't built to help with blindness. And you find out that God has a purpose for this way, way later. I don't know that that would have been a lot of comfort, but it's the truth. God has his reasons. And so we go back to John chapter 11, and this is what's emphasized again and again and again and again. God has his reasons for this. So John 11 verse 4 again. "This sickness is not to end in death." That's not his purpose. "But for the glory of God, so that the Son of God may be glorified by it." He goes down to verse 15. Start in verse 14, but catch this. So Jesus then said to them plainly, "Lazarus is dead, and I am glad for your sakes that I was not there, so that you may believe, but let us go to him." Now Jesus has just said that this reason for Lazarus' suffering is of such value that he's glad Lazarus died. The value, the purpose was of such value, the suffering is worth it. He goes on in verse 40. Jesus said to her, "Did I not say to you that if you believe, you will see the glory of God?" So they removed the stone. Then Jesus raised his eyes and said, "Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but because of the people standing around, I said it, so that they may believe that you sent me." And so here he's now praying out, but he's praying and crying out to God. And it's clear this isn't about him and God in this case. It's about them. The whole thing's about them. So that they would see and so that they would believe. And what happens after that is we see it all works. In verse 45, "Therefore many of the Jews who came to Mary and saw that what he had done believed in him." And verse 48, "If we let him go on like this, all men will believe in him." In chapter 12, later on, we see in verse 9, "The large crowd of the Jews then learned that he was there, so they came, not for Jesus' sake only, but that they might also see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. But the chief priests planned to put Lazarus to death also." Why? "Because on account of him, many of the Jews were going away and were believing in Jesus." These people were lost. Their suffering was going to begin. Their suffering was going to begin in a scale unlike anything we've experienced on this earth. They were headed towards hell. And this little moment of suffering saved them from it. It brought them to Jesus, to the salvation of it. And so Jesus looks at this moment and he does not enjoy the suffering of Lazarus. He doesn't enjoy the sorrow that everybody is going through, but he looks at it and he says, "I'm glad for your sake it's happened, so you can believe. And ultimately we understand then, so you can be saved, so you don't have to suffer." I don't know why we go through the stress and the pain. I don't know the answer for suffering. But I know this, God has the power to stop it. God has the love to care about it. And whatever it may be, there is purpose to it. And in the end, it will be worth it. And so what I want you to consider from this lesson is I want you to have faith in God, even as the rest of the world struggles with this concept. Have faith in God. Believe in His power even when your life is crumbling. Believe that He's the one that can fix your problems. And make the call. Send out the prayer. Lord, help me. And believe in His love even when you feel abandoned, lonely, even when you feel tremendous suffering. Remember, He still loves you, even though He's allowing you to go through this. And finally, keep your heart on this. Believe that in the end, all things will be right if you love Him and have been called according to His purpose. So there's reason for suffering, right? You may not always know what it is, but there is reason for it. What was the reason for Jesus on the cross? For that pain and that agony that He was going through. There absolutely was reason. It's not that God didn't have the power to take Jesus off the cross, or that Jesus lacked the power. He says, I can call 12 legions of angels. I can get off the cross. God could get Him off the cross. That wasn't the issue. It wasn't that God looked at Jesus and said, I no longer love you, Jesus. That's why you're on the cross. That wasn't it. There was a reason for it, though, and the reason is me, and the reason is you. Because you were worth the suffering to God. He would watch His Son suffer. Jesus would endure the pain for a person like me, a person who would rebel against God, a person filled with weaknesses, for a person like you. We're all the same. And God is declaring to us through what we might consider a bad thing, suffering. He's declaring to us, you are worth it to Him. He loves you. And He wants you to follow Him. And so at the end of each lesson, we offer an invitation for you to answer that invitation, to answer that call. To make it so that Jesus did not suffer on the cross for no reason in regards to you. Won't you come? Won't you become a Christian? If you believe Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, then repent of your sins. Confess your faith and be baptized into Him and have all those sins washed away by the tremendous power of that pure blood freely offered on a cross. And if you're a Christian and you have fallen away, remember how much He desperately wants you back. He is knocking on the door of your mind and of your heart. Will you not answer? Will you not come to the God who loves us? Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?